Pseudopod, episode 167, November 6th, 2009. This week's story, Love Like Thunder by Jim Baillet. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story is a very welcome return for author Jim Baillet. Jim is currently working on a larger short story collection called Coyote Tales, which this story is scheduled to feature in, and finds himself continually drawn back to Navajo culture. When we asked him what readers should consider when listening to this story, he told us the following. Whether gods or monsters still surround us might be irrelevant, because if they don't want us to know, then we never will. But that doesn't mean they don't still fascinate us, or terrify us. Your narrator this week is the magnificent Cayenne Chris Conroy of TechDiff.com. So, burn your grey hairs well, and make sure you scatter the ashes, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Love Like Thunder by Jim Baillet. For Dondo Key, it was a pleasure to dig for love. In older times, before the Americans came, he'd often walk for days following the dark wheels of Jeshu, vultures, before he found a grave. After the Spanish and American Christians brought their cemeteries, finding love was easy. And here in Ganado, Arizona, there were going to be dozens of fresh graves before the end of the weekend. Dondo had read about the strange case at Ganado Middle School in no less than 6 newspapers. It was a CNN national story. 45 students at Ganado Middle School had been shot and killed on Monday at around 11:35 a.m. while they'd been playing at recess. The FBI reported that they'd been hit by rifle fire, nearly all of them shot fatally in the head, though a few had been shot at close range by a .45 pistol. These were all estimations, though, since no one had actually heard the shots. A science teacher walking to the bathroom had passed by a window and happened to look outside and saw the students lying in bloody pools on the basketball court. She had screamed and sprinted to the principal's office, shouting for the police. The Navajo police and the FBI, after interviewing more than 300 teachers, staff, and students from the middle school and nearby elementary school, had yet to find a single witness to the shooting. 45 children had died, and no one noticed. Dondo had heard that line a lot on CNN while he sat watching in a small cafe in Chinle on his way across the grassy desert to Ganado 2 days ago. But CNN and the other local news media vultures had almost finished glutting themselves here. They'd get some sympathy footage of a traditional Navajo funeral, then pack up their vans and make the long drives back to their glass and steel pueblos in Phoenix and Los Angeles. Then Dondo could find love. Dondo had hitchhiked into Ganado from Cottonwood, where he'd spent the winter herding sheep for his clan relatives. Where the driver let him off at the Ganado post office, some of the Navajo women had set up tables along the road to sell consignment clothing and bootleg DVDs beneath a stand of Chinese elms. Dondo shouldered his hiking pack, buttoned his flannel shirt, zipped his jean jacket against the early spring chill, and set out toward the old Ganado Mission Cemetery on the hill. He avoided walking on pavement. Something about the hard surface made his shins and old ankles ache like they were made of dry chalk, ready to snap beneath his thinning muscle. The soft sand trail through the sagebrush, greasewood, and prickly pear cactus soothed his creaky joints. He pushed a strand of gray hair out of his eyes, felt the leathery skin over his brow wrinkle to the fineness of a cottonwood leaf. He knew he'd waited too long to find love. By the time he reached the cemetery, Dondo was panting with exhaustion. The old man let the pack fall from his thin shoulders and his sweaty back pinched against the cold. The faded sandstone markers, the well-tended granite tombstones bordered with plastic flowers, the few marble monuments for the World War II veterans, the aluminum grave markers for the hospital patients who died in Ganado over the decades, now strewn like tent stakes carelessly dumped out of a duffel bag. All these could be his to love. After he pitched his nylon tent in a nearby juniper grove at the base of the hill, he slept until moonrise. Then, under the pale light, he unfolded his steel trench shovel and walked upward toward the cemetery, looking for love. 3 fresh granite tombstones glinted with new sand mounded before them, the last resting place for 3 of the Ganado students killed that week. Dondo noted them as he searched for older love, deeper love. He found it at a medium-sized granite tombstone next to a clump of rabbit brush. The name read, Eleanor Sosi, born April 19, 1933, died November 18, 2004. 71 years old. Perfect. Dondo squatted over his haunches beside the grave, holding his hands over the sandy earth like he was warming himself beside a campfire. He pinched sand from the base of the tombstone, tasted it, then spat to the north. Here was love. He dug. He thanked Water Sprinkler that it had rained enough the day before so that the moist sand clung to the small trench shovel like topsoil and fell heavily as he flung it into neat piles along the grave. As he reached the mahogany coffin, there was a smell like wet earth after a rain. Four grunting, jerky pulls, and he'd hoisted off the coffin lid. Dondo ran his raw hands over his gray stubble, breathing past the 4 years of sealed decay. Behind the stench was that same smell of wet earth and rain. He leaned over Eleanor's body and performed his usual ritual. After kissing 4 times the stretched leather over the skull, he tongued inside of the empty eye sockets, then whispered his father's name into the ear holes. Then he went looking for love. He found it over Eleanor's wrist in a wide silver bracelet decorated with coral and turquoise in the shape of a 4-pronged Puebloan sun. After reaching behind the skull, he found a pair of looped white shell earrings that had fallen into the folds of the casket's silk lining after the woman's earlobes had rotted away. Dondo slipped the bracelet into his waistband, dropped the earrings into his front pocket, struggled out of the grave, and set to filling the hole. When the dawn made pale bands against the horizon, Dondo staggered back to his tent. He lay on his back and stretched flinty pain from his arthritic knees, flexing his sore muscles that dangled like limp yarn between his tendons. He pushed his sweaty white and gray hair back from his face and put the bracelet over his left wrist. The love was immediate, spreading over his chest and shoulders like warm bathwater. And in that warmth he walked the road of Eleanor Sosie's love. Granddaughters smiled at her sheep camp. Cool breezes blew between the warps of a loom in the quiet afternoons beneath cool cottonwood trees. She danced and boasted at the summer enemy way dances and ate blue cornmeal at her wedding near Wide Ruins. The birth of her children beneath the sash belt looped from the Hogan's beams was like the birth of Dondo himself. And he felt love as Eleanor Sosie had felt love, and her love became his own. He rubbed the bracelet over his shoulders, across his back, felt its trickling warmth, felt his skin smooth and bulge with rigid muscle beneath the silver and turquoise. He pushed the white shell earrings through the small piercings in his ears, and his head became wrapped in warm wool, and he tasted salty fry bread and mutton stew made for concessions at local basketball games and Saturday flea markets. The love traveled down his throat and warmed his middle like good whiskey, traveled down to his cold loins like a pair of thin, smooth legs that made him erect and hard. Dondo wanted to seize the love like hot meat, to taste it, to smell it until there was no other scent but love and wet earth and rain. But Dondo knew love was like wind and water, that it only stopped in the coldness of death. And for Dondo Key, death was the only way to find love. He rose an hour later as the warm yellow sun broke over the valley. Pulling a plastic hairbrush from his pack, he removed the white shell earrings, untied his hair from the traditional Siyil bun, and combed gray hairs from his head. After every 4th comb, he removed the gray hairs from the brush and balled them carefully just outside the tent. Then he built a fire from a paper McDonald's bag he found laying in the sagebrush and burned each gray hair. He scattered the ashes to the east, south, west, then north. He removed his shirt, stretched his toned, bulging arms, and bent over his thick legs until his fists touched the sand. Standing straight, he massaged his now sculpted abs and rolled his powerful neck. He fell forward, pumped out 100 push-ups, then flipped himself and performed 100 sit-ups, then spun to his hands and repeated until he'd completed 4 sets. He walked to his bag, removed his jeans, changed into spandex running shorts, and laced up an old pair of Reebok sneakers. He set out sprinting east toward Ganado Lake, 5 miles away. When he reached the lake, a fat man in a Marine Corps baseball cap trawled in his fishing line and asked Dondo if he was a member of the high school track team. "Something like that," Dondo said, running his fingers over the silver bracelet. Then he was running again. He paced around the lake 4 times, jogged to the spillway of the large BLM earth dam, and crouched over a deep pool in a tall stand of cattails at the lip of the spillway. Leaning over the clear water between the blue sky and the wandering gray clouds, Dondo saw Eleanor Sosie in the reflection stepping out from behind him. Rags of disarrayed flesh hung from her eyeless skeletal face and neck. Her lipless mouth and dusty teeth clacked incomprehensibly, the tongue rotted away years ago. Her bony hands reached towards Dondo's wrist, toward her bracelet that he'd taken from her grave. Dondo spun, screamed, and struggled away on all fours, stirring up dust as he crawled. But Eleanor Soucy was no longer there. He traced his hand down his now sculpted chest muscles and hard biceps until the cool silver of the bracelet calmed him. After nearly 1,000 years, Dondo knew that love made you see things. But he wouldn't give up the bracelet. At least not yet. He still had time before Eleanor regrew her tongue. After that, things would get noisy. Until then, he would enjoy what love he could. As Dondo rose, he felt a rustling on his back. During his run, rigid brown feathers as long as his forearm had sprouted along his shoulder blades. Dondo cursed under his breath, flexed, and the feathers retreated into his skin. Sometimes, love grew too strong. He ran back to Ganado, sprinting at times to match the cars zipping along Highway 264 in the distance, but then slowing before any drivers could see him dashing between the junipers. On top of the maroon clay mesa at the edge of the Ganado Valley, Dondo surprised a cottontail rabbit. As it sprinted for its den beneath a nearby boulder, Dondo hooked it with dark talons that sprouted from his fingers, then gutted and bled it before devouring meat, bone, fur, and organs in 4 bites. Love was hunger. Dondo never forgot this. When he reached his campsite, he knew something was wrong. Someone had built a small fire in front of his tent. Sparks spun into the sunset light of the violet sky. As Dondo walked, Eleanor Soucy stumbled out from behind one of the tall granite tombstones, wailing and clawing for his neck. Dondo sidestepped and took the blow against his ear. The old woman smashed against him and bit hard into his shoulder. Dondo screamed as warm blood sprayed into his hair and filled his right ear. He gripped the thin strips of leathery scalp along the back of Eleanor's head and yanked. Her neck hinged violently and popped as she continued to scream, but not in pain. Dondo knew that love held enough of its own pain. He kicked the old woman hard against a nearby grave marker. She jerked to her feet and stared back at Dondo with small, pus-colored eyes that flopped in her sockets like withered grapes. Dondo ripped them from her skull and stomped them into the sand. Eleanor fell to her knees, digging for her eyes, until she vanished into the earth like a gopher. Dondo ran the silver bracelet along his shoulder until the wound closed and the blood fell away as dry as snakeskin. Behind him, falling wood rattled, and he spun to face the man at the fire. Though the man sat in front of the flames, his face was dark in silhouette, as though the fire burned behind him.
"Damn," he said. "I think you really pissed her off."
Dondo felt his talons slip out, but he stopped them. "You found my campsite," he said.
"I don't think that Chindi is going to miss next time, though. Not after she grows her eyes back."
"Nobody finds my campsite," Dondo said. "Not when I don't want them to."
"Relax, Jeshu. I'm not going to reveal your secrets to anybody. I've got enough of my own. That's how I learn everybody else's."
"Where did you come from?"
"I could ask you the same question,"
the man said, his silhouette wavering before the fire like a black mirage.
"I haven't seen one like you in a long time. Not since the older days."
The man leaned forward and the black mirage faded away like smoke. The old man was lean, gray-haired with tan skin that reminded Dondo of a Mexican. He wore a tight denim jacket, sun-faded jeans, and a pair of cowboy boots that creaked as he adjusted his sitting position on a cedar stump. He tilted his straw cowboy hat back from his tall forehead and wiped his strong, pointed nose with his forefinger. He gazed at Dondo with strange eyes. They were yellow like pine gum, flecked with green that sparked in the firelight like turquoise.
"What do you want, old man?" Dondo said.
"Oh, it's not about what I want, Jeshu. It's about what you want," he said. "You see?"
The old man lifted the cuff of his jeans, pulled something from inside his boot, and held it out so it glistened in the fire like a thread of silver. It was one of Dondo's gray hairs that he'd combed out that morning. Dondo's neck went as rigid as yucca spines. He knew the old witchcraft and what could happen when his enemies got control of stray pieces of hair, fingernails, blood, or shit. It put him in their power, and his love was no longer his own.
"This is what you want, isn't it?"
the old man said, twirling the hair.
"Depends," Dondo said.
"On what?"
the old man said.
"On what you want for it," Dondo said. "I've got about $300 in the left side pouch of my hiking pack. There's a concho belt in there, too. That's worth at least $1,000 at any pawn shop in Gallup."
"Ah," the old man nodded. "I've got enough money. I came here for something else, just like you, Jeshu."
He pointed out over the cemetery, dark and silent beneath the stars that glittered like mica. He loosened the top button of his red flannel shirt beneath his denim jacket. A leather medicine pouch tied with a small hawk feather hung around his neck. Next to it, A silver crucifix dangled from a steel chain. The old man let the flannel hang open. The firelight revealed the old man's freckled chest and three long, pale scars that started at his collarbones and ended at his navel. It looked like a bear had tried to rip the old man's heart out. Seeing his tight, steely muscles, Dondo didn't need to guess why the old man might have survived.
"Navajos don't like to touch the dead," the old man said. "So I wonder, why is a Navajo camping out in a graveyard? So I think it's fair to see how Navajo you really are."
The old man reached behind the cedar stump, brought out a burlap gunny sack, reached inside, and pulled out a squirming blonde rodent the size of a soda bottle, a prairie dog.
"Now," said the old man, pinching a clump of blonde hairs from the crown of the prairie dog's head and holding it out to Dondo. "Take these hairs and bury them at your feet."
"Why?" said Dondo.
"I have to be sure who you really are."
Dondo leaned forward, grabbed the hairs, and dug a small hole in the sand with his free hand.
"That's it," said the old man, stroking the prairie dog. "Now, put it in the ground."
Dondo buried the hairs and closed his eyes. He didn't want to see what would happen next. The prairie dog's little nails scratched at the old man's denim as it screamed, then bawled a wheezing, choking sound like a child trying to breathe through a pillow. When Dondo opened his eyes, the old man examined the prairie dog like rich Anglo men inspected expensive bottles of wine. Sand spilled from the animal's nostrils and crusted where it had forced the prairie dog's eyes from their sockets. Its mouth had stretched wide enough for the jaw to break, and all the space between the rodent's long incisors had filled with clump sand, as had its lungs and other organs, until it was as stiff as a taxidermist's model. The smell of wet earth after a rain lingered in the air. Love renewed life, but love also took it away, and it was not a pleasure to bury love. Dondo hadn't forgotten this.
"Always very interesting. You'll have to teach me this medicine sometime, eh, Jeshu? Ah, the little bastard shit on my hand."
The old man wiped his hand in the sand and threw the prairie dog into the fire.
"You came to feast from the shooting, eh?" the old man said. "How many graves do you plan to rob?"
"What do you think?" said Dondo, feeling his muscles twitching, anxious for action.
"Do you know how hard it is to track one of you? You're always so careful. I can respect that. I learned long ago that it's a waste of time to go looking for someone like you. Better to let you come to me. And I knew a massacre like this was certain to draw you out. I just had to be patient."
"Looks like you were right," said Dondo, gritting his teeth and watching his single gray hair twirl against the old man's thumb. He didn't want to think about how painful his death would be if the old man were to break it in half. "But you talk in circles. What do you want?"
"Throw some more wood on the fire, and we'll talk."
The fire was soon leaping hot and yellow as the old man seated himself comfortably on the ground. He dug in his jacket pocket and pulled out a piece of translucent crystal the size of a doorknob. Holding it up to the sky, he looked through it at the stars.
"What are you doing?" Dondo asked.
"The stars were once like this piece of crystal," he said. "Long ago, after Ja'ona'er and Tla'ona'er, the sun and the moon walked into the sky for the first time and made the world glitter, there was a beautiful maiden. But she was lonely, so she masturbated a lot. She'd use anything, antelope horn, smooth stones, whittled cactus, even eagle feathers. She gave birth to the monsters that killed many Navajo long ago. You know the stories?"
"Yes," said Dondo, "but the monsters are all dead."
The old man chuckled and gazed at Dondo through the crystal.
"Not all of them."
"I don't believe in monsters," Dondo said.
The old man ran his thumb down each of the pale scars on his chest.
"There are 45 young people going to be buried this week who might disagree with you," the old man said, motioning to the darkness. "And their killer is still out there."
"Does he have some hair that you need too?" Dondo asked.
"She's got something else I need," said the old man.
"What?"
Dondo asked. The old man took the gray hair between his fingers and twisted it between his thumb and forefinger. Dondo collapsed to his knees.
"I'm sorry,"
he coughed, tasting blood.
"Forgive me, I spoke foolishly."
The old man nodded and slipped the hair into the lining of his cowboy hat.
"What she has doesn't concern you," the old man said. "The way I see it is this, that Chiindi is going to be after you by dawn. She'll keep coming until you put her jewelry back in the ground and find some other grave to rob. But you can't do that until I give you your hair back. So you have 4 days to find the girl who killed those children. Track her, find her, kill her, and show me the body. 4 days, starting at dawn. Dondo staggered to his feet.
Where do I start?
She lived in the trailer court in Ganado with her mother, the old man said.
With her mother? Dondo asked. She was a shut-in?
No, she's 13 years old.
Dondo blinked. A student at the middle school killed all those children? Just a kid?
Not this girl, said the old man, rising to his feet.
He walked out of the firelight and into the darkness.
Trailer number 53, Jeshu. You'll find all you need there. How can the police have not caught her yet?
Dondo yelled. The old man turned and his eyes reflected cool green light in the campfire like a coyote.
Because she's a dream thrower, he said.
Dondo tightened his fist and swore. He hadn't seen a dream thrower since the Mexicans had lost their war with the Americans. Dream throwers could walk into the thoughts of men and women, see through their eyes, reweave their minds so they saw only what the dream thrower wanted them to see. He'd seen a dream thrower kill a Mexican rancher with a weaving spindle by making the Mexican think it was a rifle and that he'd been shot. The man had writhed on the ground, clutching his chest until his heart burst from the shock. He'd heard a dream thrower had made an American lieutenant fuck a sheep in a barn at Fort Defiance. The Anglo soldier pumped and sweated all the while thinking it was his wife back in Pennsylvania. But Dondo knew dream throwers knew nothing of love, so his own mind had always been safe from their meddling. That the killer was a dream thrower explained everything. Whenever a dream thrower had killed or stolen, they were never suspected.
How do you know she killed them? Dondo asked.
The green mirrors of the old man's eyes blinked in the darkness.
Because I taught her how to do it, he said. 4 days, Jeshu. Find her, kill her, or I toss your hair in the fire, and nobody's going to worry over your ashes. And be careful.
Does she know I'm coming? Dondo said. The old man laughed.
She probably heard everything we just said.
A chill breeze rattled the greasewood against the salt brush. As dawn wove yellow, Dondo woke to find the Chiindi of Eleanor Sosi stooped over him with a sandstone boulder the size of a bowling ball. Dondo rolled left as she pounded the rock into the sand where his head had been. They wrestled in the sagebrush, clawing and biting until Dondo crawled to his tent, pulled the flint knife from the side pouch of his backpack, and rammed the blade into the roof of the Chiindi's open screaming mouth. The evil spirit dissolved into sand and fled into the cold morning air. Dondo expected this. He knew the old taboos governing love. Whenever you took love from a corpse, its Chiindi would always come to reclaim it. If you didn't get rid of the love in 4 days, the Chiindi would overpower you, possess you, then kill you. If you gave the love back before the 4 days, the Chiindi would leave, and the memory of the love would give you strength and youth for years, sometimes a lifetime. As Dondo changed into hiking boots, a pair of jeans, and a blue and gray flannel shirt, he found more rigid brown feathers sprouting from his back. He had to sit and focus before he could force the palm-sized feathers back under his skin. After rubbing the warm campfire ashes over his back and his clothing for protection, he picked 3 shards of flint from his pack and walked to the crest of a nearby hill for his breakfast. A pair of mourning doves twittered in a nearby juniper. They burst from the tree, pumping their wings towards the west, but hadn't flown more than 300 feet before Dondo threw the first flint. The first dove twisted in the mid-morning air before plummeting. Dondo threw the second flint and the other dove dropped in a burst of feathers and bone. Love was strength. Dondo knew this as he sprinted to the birds, pulled the flints from their bodies and ate them, feathers, muscle, feet, and beaks. Love was hunger. After breaking down his tent, he pulled his flint knife in its buckskin case from the pack. He also removed 2 small leather pouches. In one pouch were bits of throwing flints. In the other was tadadin, sacred corn pollen, for the hunt. From the bottom of the center pack, he removed a straight wooden bow wrapped with its yucca fiber string in a buckskin case and a quiver of arrows made from mountain lion hide. He had not hunted for many years, but with the Chiindi, he would have little time to trust to firearms. As he patted down the sand over his pack, he noticed his hands had begun to thin and wrinkle with thin veins stretching over his tendons. Love was fleeting. He knew he'd need to find a fresh grave in the next few months. He shook the silver bracelet, sang a short prayer, and the hands were strong and young once again. Trailer number 53, blue trim white siding, was at the end of a row along a rutted dirt road. Dondo stepped onto the porch and knocked. When no one answered, Dondo put his forefinger over the keyhole on the brass doorknob and punched through the lock like it was paper. He drew the flint knife as he entered, though his senses told him nobody was home. He nearly tripped on a dog's water dish as he walked into the living room.
Reaching down to reposition it, he touched the plastic dish and felt the love course up his arm. The dish had belonged to the girl's dog, and he knew the dog was now dead, and the girl had buried him.
"You took up with the wrong family," he whispered. "Poor bastard."
From touching the dish, he knew as he walked down the hallway that the girl's room was the first door on the left. He entered the room and ran his fingers over her television stand, her My Little Pony lamp, and her Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl clock on her thrift store dresser. Above the dresser was a shattered silver mirror with a deep hole punched through the paneling behind it. Dondo reached forward and felt the mirror. The love was weak, thin as glass, but it still revealed the young girl who'd once looked in the mirror every morning. Tall, with long black hair, high cheekbones, large lips. A good-looking Navajo girl, if not for the long, pale scar that led from her ear down along her jaw like a sycamore twig. Dondo's mind leapt onto that branch and followed the course of the young girl's love. Walked with her into school, watched her play with her dog, here the love grew especially strong, and walk into the nearby wash to chase sheep and splash in the cool water during the summers. Many books passed before him. She was a reader, probably more intelligent than most. He saw Chicago Bulls games on the television, her favorite team. She had always wanted to play basketball for the school, and felt the embraces of her mother and her aunties at the family sheep camp near Hunter's Point during the spring shearing season. But the love was thin as spider's web. Beneath the surface was a dark anger that Dondo had never felt from a human. True, the girl was a dream thrower, but he could feel his skin begin to sag and his stout muscles shrink slightly as he watched the constant teasing and taunting the girl had taken from her classmates. In the cold ashes of her anger, Dondo watched an older boy smash a piece of petrified wood against her head and blood-soaked her hair as her ear dangled by a strip of skin like some misshapen apricot. They called her Lynette, Lynette the teacher's pet. Lynette, her name. It filled Dondo with love. He continued to dig through her love and saw the old man who now held his hair. He was grinning like a coyote, and Dondo felt a tenderness that had probably existed between the old man and the girl. He turned his vision, and through shifting spasms of love and hate, he saw a small fire circle beneath a juniper. He tried digging deeper to find the exact spot of her camp. When Eleanor Sosie's Chindi emerged from the closet and clutched his shoulder, the long, filthy nails cut into muscle like butcher knives, glancing and scraping against bone. Dondo screamed, reminded himself that love was strength, and kicked the Chindi in the throat. The creature smashed through the fiberboard wall behind the girl's closet and into the trailer's hallway. He rubbed the bracelet over his gushing wound, trying to staunch the flow as the Chindi gathered itself for another rush. Then he heard the gunshots. Bullets punched through the window and Dondo grunted as one found him in the thigh. They passed harmlessly through the Chindi. Dondo knew only he could harm the creature, just as only the Chindi could harm him. The love and the bracelet bound his flesh and Eleanor Sosie's until Dondo finally buried their love and found another. The Chindi tackled Dondo onto the girl's bed, gnashing and biting for his neck, its small yellow eyes darting madly. He shoved the Chindi back, reached for his quiver, and rammed the end of his unstrung bow in the Chindi's left eye socket. As the thing hissed in whatever pain it was capable of feeling, Dondo kicked it away from the mattress, grabbed his bow and quiver, and dove through Lynette's bedroom window. He hit the sand in a shower of broken glass and was running to the east, trying not to hear the mourning cries of Eleanor Sosie's Chindi calling out for the love that had once been hers. Dondo sprinted until he reached the sandy bank of the wash. He leapt down and leaned against the nearest cottonwood, his heart pounding, each breath a knife in the side. The blood had clotted along his forearm, and after considerable scrubbing with the bracelet, flaked away like old rust. Pain flared up his spine and blazed in his skull. He blacked out. He woke 5 minutes later, pulled himself back into a sitting position against the cottonwood, and understood that if he was going to get his precious hair back from the old man, he needed to be on the other side of the ambush. He needed to find the girl's camp. After he'd sung a shooting song while stringing his bow, the idea came to him. He laughed aloud. It was so simple. He shouldered the bow and arrows, retied his hiking boots, and trotted up the wash back toward the trailer park. He picked among the globe mallow along the gravel edge of the park, about 50 yards from trailer 53, until he found what he was looking for, a spread of brass shells gleaming in the sand. He picked up the nearest one, and it told him all that love could tell. As he climbed the mesa, Dondo could taste the girl's angry love like ashes mixed into corn mush. Leaning against a boulder along the mesa's edge, he saw the expanse of the Ganado Valley below. The trees rusted with new buds waiting to open for spring, and the newly plowed cornfields along the wash glowed with irrigation water. He coughed deeply and spat blood. The silver bracelet on his wrist had tarnished to black. Dondo knew its love was nearly spent. He had needed a lot of love in the past few hours, more than he would usually use in a whole year. But love didn't last forever, and neither would he if he didn't find the girls' camp before dark, when the Chiindi would be at its fullest power. Beneath his flannel shirt, he felt the feathers itch and tear at his skin. He'd have to endure them. He knocked an arrow to the bow and ran low to the nearest juniper. The girl's dark love hung so heavy in the air that Dondo occasionally had to pluck a sagebrush twig or juniper branch and breathe deeply at the scent to keep his mind focused on the trail in front of him. He knew if he were a human, the girl would have sensed him coming the moment he'd climbed the mesa and would have simply put a bullet in his head. But he was not human, and neither was the girl. She wasn't much different from him, and a sympathetic love welled inside him for a moment like a turtle coming up for air. He pushed through his feelings and ran along the trail, moving east between juniper and sagebrush. He aimed his arrow forward until he heard the small crackling of a campfire coming from behind a thick clump of four tall junipers. He dropped to his stomach and crawled forward. The thick junipers gave too much cover and would conceal any muzzle flash from the rifle. He had no way of aiming a good arrow at the girl. He would need the sun. He ran to a group of boulders below the girl's camp. As he reached the rocks, the Chiindi stepped out from behind a large boulder, claws extended, fanged mouth foaming like a rabid coyote. The white shell earrings glittered in her ears. They must have fallen from his pocket in the fight in the trailer. Dondo now knew this might be his last day alive, as certainly as he knew the old taboos he'd been taught about love. If you didn't get rid of the love in 4 days, the Chiindi would eat your soul. But worse than anything was giving a Chiindi a half-love. When they took hold of a portion of their love, it gave the Chiindi twice the strength and twice the insane desire. The creature's hair now grew black and wild. Its full eyes burned furiously into him. Dondo barely had time to cast his bow aside to keep it from being broken before the Chiindi leapt at him. He brought his knee up as the creature fell on him and smiled when he heard its sternum crack like dry kindling. But it wasn't stopping the Chiindi. The creature had cut him 5 times with its rough claws and bit a deep gash over his collarbone before Dondo could slip his dark talons from his fingers and slice open the Chiindi's throat. Hot sand spilled from the wound and burned Dondo's eyes. He closed his mouth. To breathe the dust from the corpse meant death, even for one of his kind, and sprang to his feet. Gunshots filled the air. Dondo dove to the right and a hot pain exploded in his left ankle. He stumbled and rolled limply down the rocky slope. A cactus bed stopped him and he grunted as he pulled himself from the needles. He tried to stand, but when his left foot took weight, it was like he'd stepped in a bear trap. Clenching teeth against a scream, Dondo looked at the exploded strings of wet flesh intended where the dream thrower had shot him in the ankle. He cursed and hobbled to a nearby granite boulder before the girl could draw a bead with a rifle. Dondo knew he couldn't risk removing the bracelet and weakening the strength of his love, and he'd lost the earrings. There was no way of healing the ankle. He would have to endure the pain. He could do it. He knew love was endurance, and love was pain. He glanced over the boulder and saw the sun had walked down to the west. There was little time. Angling his back against the rock, Dondo selected the surest running path toward the sun that would put the daylight directly behind the dream thrower. The Chiindi swore and yowled incomprehensibly as it struggled across the sand like a crippled snake. Dondo checked the alignment of the arrow across the bow, whispered a prayer, and ran with his shattered ankle directly at the shooter's nest in the junipers. Shots rang as he hobbled over the rocky sand, and dirt exploded near his right foot as he snapped left and pushed himself hard. His ankle burned as though someone were sawing through the bone with a hatchet. He watched the sun to keep himself focused. 30 more feet to run. Smaller shots rang now. The girl had switched to the less accurate handgun. Dondo silently thanked the holy people for that. 20 more feet. 10. Dondo watched the sun. 5 feet. And the sun was there, directly behind the girl's shooting nest, throwing its intense gold light through the trees, casting the girl in clear dark silhouette, her long hair pulled back into a ponytail as she reloaded her rifle. Dondo drew the bow and loosed his arrow straight into the sun. Her shadow fell back against the trunk and slid to the sand. Dondo drew a fresh arrow and sprinted towards the junipers. He fell to the ground when he heard a pistol shot. After waiting nearly a minute, trying not to think of the Chiindi, he rose on his good leg and staggered towards the junipers. The fire still smoked next to where Lynette sat against the juniper trunk with Dondo's arrow through her shoulder. She bled from a bullet hole in her temple, and her semi-automatic Colt 45 was still warm in her hand.
"You didn't need to do that, my niece," Dondo said. "You should have loved your life more than that."
Dondo stooped by her side, opened the pouch of sacred corn pollen, and sifted the yellow powder through the girl's bloody hair before recollecting it and pinching it back in the pouch. Then he searched the front pocket of her blue jeans and found the girl's small leather pouch that the love in the mirror in her room had revealed to him. He opened the cinch, dug among the yellow corn pollen, arrowheads, and chips of cedar, and carefully extracted three gray hairs, pale as slivers of glass. He held them loosely in his left fist and knew by the sudden sparks of their strange love that they belonged to the old man. The feathers over his back flexed against his shirt with a new power.
"How did you find her?" a voice spoke behind him. Dondo spun, pulled the bow taut, and loosed the arrow.
The old man with the gold-green eyes snapped his hand forward in a blur and caught the arrow 2 inches from his chest.
"In a hurry to get rid of me, Jeshu?" he said, chuckling and tossing the arrow into the sagebrush.
He pulled Dondo's single gray hair from his jacket pocket and twirled it.
"Don't worry. We'll part ways soon. How did you find the girl?"
"Her name was Lynette," Dondo said, bending down and picking up one of the spent rifle shells. "But you already knew that. You knew her from before. Before you taught her to kill. I sensed it in her love. How she trusted you to protect her. Just like I felt her love on the bullets. I found some of the cartridge cases after she tried to shoot me in her trailer. She was too eager. Too young. Since she'd loaded them here at her campsite, I was able to follow her trail. Same way you followed mine, I guess."
He threw the shell disdainfully at the old man, who nodded knowingly at Dondo, swept off his straw Stetson and caught the shell in the hat.
"Do I get to keep the change?"
he asked, smiling broad and white.
"Go to hell," Dondo growled.
"No such place," the old man said. "You've been hanging around the whites too much, Jeshu. Is that Chiindi still after you?"
As if on cue in the distance, the Chiindi howled in mournful rage.
"Yep," said Dondo.
"Then you'll need to hurry. Less than 20 minutes until sunset. Take off your shirt."
"Why?" Dondo asked. "I killed the girl, just as you asked. You've seen her body."
The old man drew a .38 caliber revolver from his waistband, fired, and a juniper branch 8 inches from Dondo's ear exploded in splinters. The old man aimed at Dondo's chest.
"I'm really good with this thing," he said. "Take off your shirt."
Dondo loosed the flannel shirt from his waistband and took it off. His pectorals and abdominal muscles flexed against the cool air. From his front pocket, the old man pulled the pale crystal that he'd shown Dondo on the previous night. He threw it on the ground between them.
"Good. Now, on your knees," he said.
"What about my hair?" Dondo said.
"That Chiindi will be up here in another minute or two. If you keep stalling me until dark, that Chiindi is going to be sprinting after you a lot faster than you or I can run, Jeshu. On your knees."
Dondo obeyed.
"Now, pluck 4 of your feathers," the old man said.
Dondo's fingers wandered toward the knife at his waistband. He could not give over any of his feathers.
"The feathers growing from your shoulders," the old man said. "I'll need 4 of them. I'd take them from you myself, but I think we both know what would happen if I tried that. And since I'm not in the mood to be struck by lightning, I think it'll be best if you handle them. 4 large ones. Place them on the sand near the crystal."
Dondo's gaze wandered to the dead girl sitting up against the juniper trunk whose love had driven her to kill her enemies, and then herself. A sudden cool breeze tossed her dark hair.
"Is that what this is all about?" Dondo said. "Those dead kids? This dead girl? For my feathers?"
"The feathers of a thunderbird are some of the strongest medicine," the old man said. "I'd be a fool not to try to claim them from you, just like I would have been a fool to hunt the dream thrower myself. She would have seen me coming a mile away. I'm a bit too human for her. Now pluck the sons of bitches."
"You can't do this," said Dondo. "This hasn't been done for thousands of years."
4!
The old man yelled. His green-gold eyes glowed a deadly white over the pupils.
"First you give me back my hair," Dondo demanded. "You can't take the feathers, and I won't give them to you until I know the Chiindi has been satisfied."
The old man seemed to shake with rage.
"You're right," he whispered. "It's only fair."
Dondo took the hair from the old man and dug a hole in the sand with his hands. Slipping the silver bracelet from his wrist, he felt the love leave him, felt the weight of the years return for a moment, but the strength from the dream thrower that was now in the sacred corn pollen of his pouch would give him the extra love that he would need.
And there were the silver hairs in his left hand, the ones Lynette had made sure someone would find. He silently thanked the girl for the love she'd kept to herself and now shared with him.
Dondo dropped the silver bracelet into the hole.
"Good," said the old man. "Now bury it, burn the hair if you must, and give me those feathers before I put a bullet in your eye. I don't know if it will kill you, but I know you'd hate having to lose one of those pretty brownies of yours."
The Chiindi brayed angrily as it dragged itself into view behind the old man and sighted Dondo. It squirmed eagerly towards him. Dondo lifted the hair in his right hand and twirled it in his fingers. None of this felt right. The color of the hair was wrong. It wasn't his. He smelled it. It was the hair from the prairie dog. Dondo laughed sickly. Lynette knew you and trusted you, he said. And she watched you always, especially after she'd killed those children. That was witchcraft that you taught her, old man. But she had secrets, and she showed me a secret that was right in front of me. What? Said the old man. What is it? I was an old man when the Anasazi lived in this place, Dondo said. And I know the difference between my hair and a prairie dog's.
What do you mean?
The old man said. You bluffing trickster, said Dondo. This hair isn't mine. The old man grinned and stroked the hawk feather tied to the medicine pouch around his neck. He produced Dondo's single gray hair, and Dondo snatched it, popped it into his mouth, and chewed it down to nothing.
Now, said the old man, the feathers?
As Dondo raised his left hand, the silver hairs in his fist scraped his palm like wire bristles.
It wasn't my hair, said Dondo, and neither are these.
He thrust the old man's gray hair into the hole with the silver bracelet and buried them. The old man screamed and lunged for the small hole, already choking and thrashing against the sand that filled his lungs and throat. Dondo saw the Chiindi dissolving into drifting ash as he sprinted to the west toward the sun, glowing like a disk of abalone shell. He reached the edge of the mesa just after the old man had pulled his hair from the ground and knelt, coughing up sand.
You damn Jeshu! The old man choked. You fight like a Hopi!
He cocked the pistol, aimed from his knees, and fired. Dondo let out a triumphant war whoop as he leaped from the mesa. His arms splayed as the large brown feathers spread along his back and shoulders, then up to his wrists. His love was still strong, and love gave wings. Jeans and hiking boots fell to the rocks below as the large brown eagle-like bird flapped its immense wings in a swift climb. The old man shot his gun empty, yowled in rage, and threw the pistol in a futile arc after the bird, wheeling away on wings as wide as a basketball court. As the sun dipped red into the distant mesas, a pale arrow of lightning seared the air, and the dark bird vanished in a chant of thunder that was as loud and terrifying as love itself.
You know, for a borderline psychopathic, manic-depressive, Middle Ages detective, Hamlet got a lot of things right. There are, indeed, more things in heaven and earth than either Horatio or us can dream of, and thankfully, almost all of them don't involve murdering your uncle in an elaborate scheme involving performance art, a conspiracy of cartographers, and lots, and lots, and lots of stabbing. A lot of horror does exactly what Jim does here, and what the Dane talked about in a roundabout way, showing us a very different life cycle and history that's all the more unsettling because of the common ground it shares with our world. It's the sort of approach that the Underworld movies, the World of Darkness role-playing games, and Highlander take. And by Highlander, I mean the only film they ever made. You know, the first one. That idea that just to the left of our world is one far older and far, far more dangerous is, by itself, very intriguing. However, the approach Jim takes here is both subtly different and, to my mind, much more involving. Because this world doesn't care about ours, barely registers its existence as anything other than a food source, and does so with none of the malice or forced jeopardy you'd expect. It's nothing personal. We're just in the background to someone else's story, which is both far more beautiful and far more dangerous than ours, and yet still contains normal, flawed, interesting people. It's an exceptionally difficult thing to do this well, and Jim has managed it completely. The horror here doesn't come from cheap thrills, or from gore, or from the realization that the calls are in fact coming from inside the house. The horror here comes from the fact that this is a different world with different rules. And if you're very lucky, it won't notice you. Whereas if we're very lucky, you'll like this story enough to donate. See what I did there? Subtle and humble. Well, subtle. Well, anyway, money. If you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Every single cent goes to feeding our authors and covering our costs, so if you have the cash to spare, please consider making a donation. If you need even more reason to donate, why not check out our sister podcasts, Escape Pod for Science Fiction and Podcastle for Fantasy. They're both weekly, they're both great, and they're both free. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. and Pseudopod knows that it could disappear into the great unknown, and it would wear our face as though it were its own.